All I know is that this is Greek Club at Concordia Seminary, and it is, let's see, this is about the, what, the 13th of July. And, you know, I was calculating calendar and resources and stuff, and I think this may actually be the last Greek Club for the summer, because Veltz is teaching Greek, and Dr. Oswald is on leave, Higuntars, and Dr. Maxwell, or Professor Lewis is teaching. Jeff Oswald is starting a leave, so it's going to be hard to staff Greek Club, and I'll be gone to Wisconsin next week, and then two Tuesdays camping in Glacier National Park.
Oh, that's great.
So we're happy about that. Not that anybody really wants to hear this. What they want to hear is 2 Corinthians chapter 1, and we're starting at verse 23. So at any rate, again, just for our worldwide listening audience, we'll have Greek Club today, and then probably not again until September when we start up classes. So, if your self-esteem and your worldview was built upon Greek Club, well, then you needed to change it anyway.
So sad.
yeah, you're full of it.
This is
going to
be my last 2 days
of going on vacation. Yeah. Okay. Good. That works. Okay, but we are at 1:23, and. So we'll just pick up there. And Paul says, Ego de martyra tan thean epikalumai epitein emem sikein. Hatip se dominas humon uk eti elthan eis corinthon. Corinthon. Again, Paul is still dealing with the itinerary problems and the back and forthness of it and so forth. And so now he gets pretty serious. The verb epikaleo means to call upon, perhaps not surprisingly. And especially in the middle voice, it can mean invoke. The lexicon actually suggested that meaning for active voice too, so maybe there isn't necessarily a big change in meaning. So I invoke tanth, and now we have two accusatives, right? No, martyra is actually from martus, which of course means witness. I think everybody knows that. It's a third declension noun. So it actually goes martus, martyras, martyria, martyra. So this is so nothing as e a, third declension, right? So this is an accusative noun. And tantheon, of course, is accusative. And the fact that it has the article nails down the fact that this is the direct object of the verb, and that witness is the what's sometimes called the predicate accusative, or Wallace's grammar. It's the complement in an object complement double accusative. That's a little big to say, but I actually like it because it's very descriptive, right? So, I am invoking God as a witness, or God to be a witness. See? And now, epi plus the accusative, of course, epi can mean anything, just about. In this context, with the accusative, it can actually mean against. And that's the way at least some of the English translations translate it. So, against my life. So this is a pretty serious oath here that Paul is taking. And again, he's trying to be very clear and convince them that his itinerary plans were not because he's some sort of vacillator, right, or some indecisive person. Amen there, we've got epitein amen psikein. New Testamentalers are used to seeing possession just expressed with the genitive, mu, right? But this is actually, we see it occasionally. John likes it, oddly enough. This is the possessive adjective. And the dictionary form is emas. And then it goes emas, ema, ema, eman, I think. And then it just agrees, like any other adjective, in gender, number, and case. And so that's why you get tain, emain, psikain, right? And here, by the way, probably psyche doesn't mean soul as opposed to body, right? It normally means life or self. And only if you have kind of a hyper-Platonic worldview will it mean soul as opposed to body. Occasionally it might mean that. I can think of one time when it does, probably, but... So I am invoking God as a witness against my life that, and now we'll do wooden, sparing you, no longer did I come, or cameth I, unto Corinth. See, Paul's again trying to show why he didn't follow through with that original itinerary that was described up in verses 15 and 16. Now, phaedomenos, this is from phaedomai, it's a deponent verb, and it means to spare. So this is just a participle, it's deponent, middle participle. It takes a genitive object. So humon is actually the direct object of the participle, sparing you. And there's any number of forces. I actually wanted to give it a causal force, because I was sparing you. And I thought this would be really groovy. Since it's a present stem, we could make it connative. Because I was trying to spare you, I no longer came to Corinth. Because the visit to Corinth, again, was a painful visit, the first one. And so Paul changed his plan because he didn't want to grieve them unnecessarily. That, at least, I think would fit fairly well into the context. Eothon, of course, is just our regular friend, Erkomai, aorist indicative, active, first singular. So doing verse 23 again. But I invoke God as a witness against my life, that because I was trying to spare you, I no longer came unto Corinth. All right? And then it goes on from there. Questions, comments, observations. Pretty straightforward. Okay, verse 24. Ook. That's a clause, by the way. Ook. Yeah, we'll supply some stuff. Ukati kyriuomen humon tes pisteos. Allah synergoi esmen tes karas humon. Te gar piste hestekate. Well, it starts with just not. And this is usually filled in by, I did not do this. Or, it was not the case. And then the hati can either be translated as a kind of a explanatory that, or it could actually have a causal force, full causal force of because. So either it was not the case that, or it is not the case that we are lording it over your faith, or it is not the case, or I did not do that because I am lording it over your faith. So either one will work grammatically. And kyrieuo, which means to lord over something, the something is in the genitive. So again, we have tes pisteos would probably be the direct object, and then humon, even though it's in front, modifies faith. So to do it woodenly, you'd say, we are not lording it over the faith of you. Right? And that would be actually a subjective genitive, I suppose, or possibly possessive, your faith or your believing. Right? So we're not doing that. We're not lording it over you. Rather, we are synergoi, co-workers, literally, of the joy of you. We're co-workers of your joy. And this would be the genitive of happiness. The sense is clear enough. What? We're co-workers hoping to produce your joy, or because of your joy, or we're your joyful co-workers, or, you know, whatever, however you want to label that. And why are we that? For, dative of means, by faith, hestekate, you are standing. This is from histeme, and it's actually a perfect indicative active second plural. But the perfect active of histemi has a present indicative intransitive meaning. And who can remember these things? Answer, nobody, which is why you look it up. And by the way, Dr. Veltz's discussion of the me verbs is terrific in his not-so-fundamental Greek grammar. He actually has a summary of the meanings of histemi, which are nightmarishly complex. And I think that's in chapter 35, actually, of his not-so-fundamental Greek grammar, which all of you remember if you had intensive Greek, like you, Ben, because you stopped learning anything new at chapter 30, right? And all you were doing is getting ready for the qualifier. Absolutely. Amen. Because you're a normal guy. That's what everybody does. So you're teaching this. You're teaching, and you get this eyes glazed over. Oh yeah, here's six meanings of the dative. So, by the way, those sound effects are free, and it's a special service of Greek Club. Questions about verse 24? Again, not too bad. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And the gravel is falling out of the truck and all that kind of stuff. Right. Right. Okay, well, now Paul wants to explain a little bit more what his motives were, right, and what was going on there in his, at that time, extremely troubled relationship with the Corinthians. So why don't we'll get verses 1 and 2 of chapter 2 in hand. So ekrina gar hem auto tuta, ta me palen en lipe pros hemas elthane. Egar ego lipo humas, Kaitis ha euphrinon me, eme ha lupumenos ex emu. So this is our friend Krino, which means to judge, or not too difficult to have it mean also decide, right? And it's a liquid stem verb. The only thing that actually deliberately clues you in that this is an aorist is the alpha connecting vowel. So it's like elusa. Right, so the augment, and then the alpha connecting vowel. But again, the liquid stem verbs are difficult, irregular stems. Four, I decided in relation to myself, or with respect to myself, this. I decided this. Now, what's the this? Answer, it's the article plus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 words. Okay, so that article actually governs the infinitive elthane at the end of the verse. I decided this, the action of coming. Now let's modify ta elthane a bunch, right? First of all, we'll negate it, right? The not to come, right, ta me. Now we'll recall this changing itinerary and we'll say again, right? And then we'll say, with grief, and then we'll say, to you. And we'll put it all in between the article and the infinitive. Now, if anybody can remember the name of the space between the article and the infinitive, he gets to be, well, we'll just, first of all, we'll see if anybody can remember it, since the hyperbatime, we did it last week. I know, exactly, exactly. That's why you don't get anything. Now, what is that in Latvian? Right. That's right. Yeah, I think in Spanish it's la hiperbatana, right? And in German it's das hiperbaton. Right, yeah, I know it is, yeah. So that's why you don't win anything this week. So, yeah, but actually the article turns all that into a noun, right? And, of course, an infinitive is, in the beginning, it is actually a verbal noun, and that's why it can readily, of course, take the article. So this is what Paul decided, not to come again to you with grief. See? And again, what's neat about this is that this is, you see, again, I think I mentioned this last week, you get a lot of men and de in the Corinthian letters. And what you're seeing is Paul's ongoing, not only apostolic, but also sort of in the personal sense, pastoral relationship. And again, there's contrast here. In Galatians, as we all know, it's like take no prisoners, right? Black and white. If anyone's preaching a gospel contrary to what we preach, let him be accursed. But in Corinthians, you actually see Paul working over time in his relationship with the Corinthian believers. So he didn't want to show up again for another painful visit. That's what he's saying. And then he explains that with another gar statement in verse 2. For if I am grieving you, little emphasis there with the pronoun. And by the way, notice that lupeo is, first of all, it's a contract verb, which explains why you've got lupo. It's e plus long is long. Ben, you're smiling over there. And it is actually a transitive verb. In the Gospels, what you more often see is the passive form of lupeo, with an intransitive meaning, to be sad. But it's actually a transitive verb, to grieve someone, and that's how it's functioning here. For if I am grieving you, now when you have a conditional sentence that's asking a question, I actually looked this up, you can you at least at times translate chi with then, right? Who then is the one who is making me glad? Euphrino means to rejoice somebody or to make them glad. Except the one who is being grieved by me. Right? So, again, it's...
What
is that? Well, it means, look, it means, it's us. We've got to work this out, see? So, look, that's the reason I didn't want to come and grieve you again, because you're going to be the one who's making me glad. That's what Paul is saying. So again, it was kind of a pastoral, apostolic decision not to push the confrontation, push the relationship in that way, but rather, as we'll see in a few verses, he actually wrote a letter rather than making another visit. See? Yeah, the hamburger helper and lupumenos, right? And so you actually have the active voice meaning, transitive meaning, and this is actually would be a present participle passive, and it has the full sense of the one who is being grieved because of me or by me. So
he repeats the reason twice.
Yes, he does. Right.
And is that to make an emphasis?
Well, he's just really wanting to explain his motives. Right. What was his plan? Right. Right.
Repeating and make sure they don't understand.
Exactly. Exactly. And as you know, it'll take us a while to get there, but I think Titus actually, he gets named in chapter 2, and then it breaks off, and he comes up again in chapter 7. Second Corinthians actually seems to be written on the occasion of Titus finding Paul on the road in Macedonia and saying, breakthrough with the Corinthians. You know, because Titus presumably... I'd have to go back and review. I can't remember if he would have been the bearer of the sorrowful letter. You know, probably. Of course, we don't know exactly. But somehow Titus has been Paul's man on the scene. He's been on the ground in Corinth, so to speak. And now he has actually found Paul and said, look, there's been a turning in their attitude, the beginning of a spiritual reconciliation and that kind of thing. So again, it's really interesting to read 1 and 2 Corinthians, obviously theologically, but I think it's also it shows the mind of the apostle working in complex circumstances, both interpersonally and theologically. So it's really, you know, for our day when things I think are in some ways are getting ministries getting more complicated because the world is shrinking and so forth. I think maybe these letters will grow in their importance. So, good questions about 1 and 2. Anything that was a little theology. Sorry, I didn't want to make it interesting. This is Greek Club. Okay, verse 3. Kai egrapsa tuta auta hina me elthon lipain sko afhon ede me kairain pepoithos epipantas humas. Hati he eme chara panton humon esten. And, it's a good word, and egrapsa, just the aorist indicative from grapho, and I wrote tuta auta. Now, tuta is the direct object, and this is, auta is the third person personal pronoun, and tuta auta is normally, auta is taken here normally as if it were in predicate position, and so it is intensifying. That is, the thing, this thing itself, or often translated, this very thing, right? And I wrote this very thing in order that I might not, when I had come, have grief. Lupain is the direct object of the subjunctive verb sko, which is actually from echo, believe it or not, because the third principal part of echo is eskon. You drop the augment off, and you get sko. So I think it must go sko, ske, ske, skomen, skata, Skousen. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Decline it or parse it yourself. Right. Right. In order that I might not, when I had come, have grief from, literally, from whom it was necessary me to rejoice. Right? Well, at that point, you can kind of put it together, right? From whom, now this is a, yeah, this is a little terse here. This is a good example of how the relative pronoun in Greek, as well as in English, can do double duty. What you might actually want is from the people, because of whom, or in relationship to whom, me to rejoice, and the accusative me is the subject of the infinitive, was necessary or should happen. Right? Again, it's just a little tight, so it takes a while to turn it into acceptable English, but the sense of it, I think, is tolerably clear. And now a participle from patho in the perfect stem. You can see the duplication there. And again, the perfect active of patho means, among other things, to be confident. And we've seen it before with that meaning here in 2 Corinthians. In fact, if you just glance across the page at verse 15 at the top, you actually see the related noun, pepoithesis, which means confidence, right? So being confident because of or over all of you that my joy, there's the demonstrative, or excuse me, the possessive adjective again, the my joy is of all of you, is yours, or in Texan, is all y'all's. Okay. So the participle, pepoithos, you know, it could be a number of things probably, but causal, I think, works tolerably well here. So to get all of verse 3 again fairly smoothly, and I wrote this very thing, lest when I had come I might have grief from the people because of whom it was necessary for me to rejoice. And again, pepoithos then modifies, I wrote, because I am confident in all of you that my joy is your joy, all y'all's joy is of you. All right, comments, observations. I can't describe it sort of comprehensively, but it's just so interesting to me to see the different style in the Pauline epistles. I mean, this does not, at least I can't tell you why, which means it's not a very strong argument, but it just doesn't read like Galatians, you know. It doesn't read like Romans. And so, again, well, two things. One is it shows that Paul can write in different styles, and he's probably dictating. It means that perhaps a particular is of the style of a letter may be somewhat governed by his scribe, his amanuensis. But it also kind of undercuts those people who want to argue based on style that Paul wrote this or Paul didn't write this. I mean, I think it's just, yeah, I just think there's interesting variety.
Maybe we should just take him at his word.
Maybe we should just...
writing through tears. And
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. No, it's very personal and... Exactly, yeah. Exactly, and it's a very emotional appeal, right? Exactly. Yeah, and you know, whether or not Paul was classically trained in rhetoric is unknown, but he does very well, of course, seem to be an educated person, and an educated person would know how to move rhetorically, see? Something which is, by the way, is being lost. Did I mention this book, Why Johnny Can't Preach? Did I mention that? It's actually a very good read. It's a little paperback. It's about 100 pages. It's written by a Reformed scholar. It's called Why Johnny Can't Preach. And the two answers are because Johnny can't read and because Johnny can't write. It's really an interesting book. He really pegs some things. Oh, and then he also says, oh, and by the way, when you preach, you should talk about Christ. You should preach the glories of Christ. He says it in a very, at times, very Reformed way, you know, because he is a Reformed scholar, but it's a very nice book. And I think it calls some things to our attention. So it certainly has helped me to pay a little more attention to how I've been preaching lately. So, okay, now, Dan, for your benefit, here's another gar sentence, right? Here's another explanation, right? So verse 4, Paul, really, it's quite remarkable. I mean, if you took all the gars out of Paul's letters, it'd be like 5 pages shorter, right? Of course, the NIV, unfortunately, does this sometimes. They leave out the becauses and the fors. It's really difficult. I'm teaching Galatians now, and they did it again. So all right, verse 4. Ek gar peles thlipsaos kai sino kais kardias egrapsa humin dia polon da krion. U kena lipe theta alatein agapen hen agnota hein echo perisoteros ace humas. And this is actually a good, it's almost time to stop. It's a good place to stop. Four, from or because of much tribulation and literally prison of heart. I had to look it up. Synoche means a prison, but it also by extension comes to mean distress, right? Distress of heart, I wrote to you, and Josh, you had mentioned this proleptically just a second ago, through many tears. Well, I say proleptically because we're fixing to get a prolepsis here. For I wrote, because of much tribulation and distress of heart, I wrote to you through many tears. I didn't write, or not, in order that you be grieved. We'll go ahead and give it there the full passive sense from lupeo, and it's a subjunctive in the henna clause there. Rather, the love. Now, what he's actually done here, and remember they're hearing this, is he has taken the direct object in the henna clause, and he's fronted it for emphasis. This is called, among other things, prolepsis, right? So, tain agapein actually belongs after the henna. It's a part of the henna clause. So you might translate it, in order that you might know gnota, this is the aorist subjunctive from ginosko. But if you're going to translate this out, underline or italicize or bold tain agapein because it's been fronted for emphasis. But in order that you might know the love, which, there's the relative pronoun which has its antecedent as love, feminine singular, and it's accusative because the relative pronoun is the direct object of the next verb, the love which I have. Perisoteros, adverb, comparative adverb, more abundantly unto you or for you. So, picking up 3 and 4, and we'll get the complete thought and its explanation. For I wrote this very thing, lest after I came, I might have grief from those who should make me glad, because I was confident in all of you that my joy is yours. For through or because of much tribulation and distress of heart, I wrote to you through many tears, not that you be grieved, rather that you know the love which I have more abundantly for you. Again, this is very tender, right? And Dan, as you said, he's really trying to explain and reach out to them, and that helps to explain the style. So, yeah. And what's cool is that in a very small way, you know, when you've been 5, 8, 10, 12, 15 years in ministry in the same place, you actually can sort of understand, you know, the sort of intense connection that being the preacher of the gospel actually creates between, you know, pastor and his family and the congregation. So. That's an interesting question. Yeah, he really does, right. Right, right, right. Yeah, and there are some specific rhetorical things in Philemon as well. Yeah, there's a fairly lengthy commentary on Philemon written by Dr. John Nordling, so, which is, well, the introduction is worth the price of the commentary, actually.
There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, there is. So, okay, very good, Greek Club, and again, we'll be taking a break, so... all of you listeners in the Gambia and in Kazakhstan, in Southern California, Brazil, Spain won the World Cup this week. So that was good for all the Spaniards and the Netherlanders, the Hollanders. Jesus loves you too. And we'll see you in September.